Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. It's our monthly book show today, and the theme is poetry. Joining us, retired reference librarian Jill Erickson. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning, Mindy.
And New York Times bestselling author Peter Abrahams. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, both of you.
All I can think of, Jill, is you standing in front of many bookcases of your own home, of your own poetry.
That's a pretty good image.
You're always bringing poetry to us.
Well, and I have to say, we are doing this show in large part because Jane Iafrady had originally wanted to do this last month. And then what with the blizzard, you know, and there were various reasons we couldn't do it last month, which was National Poetry Month.
Am I a sub coming in off the bench? Is that what you're saying?
But, you know, what you indicated was you're not a big poetry reader necessarily, but even if you find a few good poems, you know, they'll stick with you.
Okay, here's the thing. I haven't read much poetry for years, but I was an English major. Mm-hmm. And I was immersed in poetry and then fell out of it. And now doing the research for this show, I'm going to start reading a poem a day to myself.
Oh, good,
This makes me feel so happy.
Yeah, it's a huge subject, and it reminds me of that quote from Alexander Pope, the neoclassical 18th century poet, Alps on Alps arise. When you come into a new field of knowledge, Alps on Alps arise. And of course, Alps on Alps is total poetry right there.
Yeah. All right, so what's your first book?
Well, my first book, how can this not be my first book as I sit in the town of Falmouth, is a book by Catherine Lee Bates. You may have heard of her.
Oh, yeah.
There's a big statue of her on the front of the library. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk about her today is that, in fact, I wanted to remind everybody, if you have never heard of this before, the 27th annual Catherine Lee Bates Poetry Fest is happening June 11th between 4:30 and 6, and it's at the Museums on the Green, and the Falmouth Historical Society does this. And you write a poem, and you can win a prize. And prizes include gift certificates, and your entry has to be received by Friday, May 1st at 3 p.m., and there are entry forms online, I believe.
Must be June 1st.
Well, you mean June 1st. May 1st already happened.
Well, right. It has to be. Yes, they must have. Seeing as it's happening on June 11th, and they had to be arrived by May 1st, perhaps you have missed that opportunity.
Yeah. Oh, I guess so.
However, I didn't even notice. I'm so sorry that I mentioned
this.
Everyone was so excited. You'll be good for the next year if you attend. So the Poetry Fest will be held Thursday, June 11th, which is what I was thinking of, at 4:30 p.m. at their Cultural Center, 55 Palmer Ave. And hope to see you there. It says fun, it's free, and refreshments are included. So there are reasons to go aside from the poems. Okay. But what I have here in my hand, of course, I had to have at least one Catherine Lee Bates book. And this one is called America the Beautiful and Other Poems. And I'm sure many of you know that America the Beautiful, the song, was based on the poem that she did. And what I have here, though, is a couple of other poems by her, and one of them, a couple of the poems in here, she, as you may or may not know, but probably you do if you ever walk past the library, she grew up in Falmouth. And so here's a little bit from The Falmouth Belle. Never was there lovelier town than our Falmouth by the sea. Tender curves of sky looked down on her grace of knoll and lea. Sweet her nestled Mayflower blows, ere from prouder haunts the spring, yet has brushed the lingering snows with a violet-colored swing. Bright the autumn gleams pervade cranberry marsh and bushy wold, till the children's mirth has made millionaires in leaves of gold. And upon her pleasant ways, set with many a gardened home, flash through fret of drooping sprays visions far of ocean foam. Happy bell of Paul Revere, sounding o'er such blessed demesne, while 100 times the year weaves the round from green to green. Never were there friendlier folk than in Falmouth by the sea. Neighbor households that invoke pride of sailor pedigree. Here is princely interchange of the gifts of shore and field, starred with treasures rare and strange that the liberal sea chests yield. And I won't go on because this is quite a long poem. But she has a whole, there's another whole poem about the Falmouth Church in here. But of course, she also has a lot of other poems that might be of interest to you. And this copy that I happen to have is at Woods Hole Public Library. A lot of these, like the Falmouth Public Library has, I think, every Catherine Lee Bates book that was ever published, but they all keep it in the reference room. They don't let it circulate, although they might if you ask them.
So,
I'm not there anymore, but somebody else might.
Somebody else.
You can
might.
Ask somebody okay. else. Anyway, Catherine Lee Bates has written tons of poems, and I thought I should start with a Falmouth poem.
All right. Thank you. Peter.
Well, I started with A Little History of Poetry by John Carey because I wanted to read, you know, something that was all about poetry from the start of it to where we are now. And he begins with, he says, you know, what is poetry? And he defines it as like the way as sound is to music, that poetry, that, you know, that's what poetry is like. It's language that is like, instead of just unorganized, it's organized. I didn't like that, his definition at all, because it doesn't differentiate between poetry and prose. Mm-hmm. So I thought about that, and this is my, you know, this is my definition of poetry. It's poetry is to prose as whiskey is to beer.
Whoa.
So beer, whiskey is basically distilled beer, and poetry is distilled prose. It's the distillation of it. It's the breaking it down to only the essence. I think Mary Oliver and other people who've written about poetry would agree with that. So that, I think, is what to hold on to. Anyway, he begins with the oldest known poem, which is the Epic of Gilgamesh, which was, it's 4,000 years old. And so they found these clay tablets in Mesopotamia, which with cuneiform, you know, which means like wedge-shaped marks, which is a language, but they didn't know it was finally decided, and they just sat in the British Museum. And in the 1870s, some total amateur who had nothing to do with nothing came in and deciphered it.
Oh my
and
goodness.
Now we have this Epic of Gilgamesh. So, first of all, imagine.
Wait a minute, is he the only guy who did that? Because maybe he made it up.
Oh, no, I think they would be able to test it. That's
okay,
great.
Right, okay.
But yeah, it's a hoax. And everything I'm going to tell you is false. So, but just imagine, so the way you would do it is you would take a reed and you would inscribe on these in wet clay.
Oh.
You know, so think of revision.
Yeah.
Right? Not
nope.
so easy.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he takes us through the Epic of Gilgamesh, which turns out to be this huge, long epic, you know, with gods and kings and fighting, like all the other epics, the Iliad, and in other words, the natural and the supernatural all mixed together. And what we never know is, did they really think there was a difference? Mm-hmm. To us, there's a huge difference, but maybe it was all the same to them. So it starts with that. It takes us through, you know, the Roman poets, Anglo-Saxon, Beowulf, Shakespeare, up into modern day. And he ends with, so you start with that kind of thing, the kings, the gods, and we'll end with this. This is Les Murray, who died. He's an Australian poet, died in 2019, so quite recently. So this is here is what up-to-date poetry looks like. Everything except language knows the meaning of existence. Trees, planets, rivers, time know nothing else. They express it moment by moment as the universe. Even this fool of a body lives it in part and would have full dignity within it, but for ignorant freedom of my talking mind.
Mm.
Ignorant freedom. I love it. That's poetry.
All right, name of that book is?
Is A Little History of Poetry by John Carey. Just an overview of poetry from A to Z.
All right. Jill.
Okay, well, I have to start with, I started, of course, with the woman in town, but I did have to take off my bookshelves. The book I was given when for Christmas in 1966, I was quite young, and my Aunt Avis sent this to me, and I still have it because I love it, but I am really interested sort of in what the poems are in this book, because it's not just poems. It's a lot of things. It's all kinds of things, little stories and
beautiful illustrations.
And beautiful. The illustrators. I was just looking, when I was getting ready for the show, I started looking who did the illustrations, and it's every single, like, famous child's illustrator that you can imagine. This one happens to be Palmer Cox, but there are lots and lots of the illustrations are really as spectacular as the actual.
You could frame some of that. I don't want to say rip out a page of a book because I know you'll have a heart attack, but they're that pretty. They're that pretty.
So this is.
You should do it right now.
So this is the Brownie Yearbook by Palmer Cox. And I thought I'd bring in April and May. April is when fall the drenching April showers to start the grass and bud the flowers. Each cunning brownie must be spry to keep his scanty garments dry, for they know where in wood or field the friendly tree will shelter yield. And then May is when flowers spring on every side in gardens fair and meadows wide. The brownies quickly take the chance that's offered for a merry dance. They place the tapering pole upright to which they fasten ribbons bright. And, of course, May Day, one does that. And one more in June. In sunny June, when skies are bright and woods and water do invite the people from their tasks away to sport themselves by night and day, the brownies are not slow to take a ride upon a pleasant lake or follow fast by rock and tree, a stream that hastens to the sea. Though dangers may, the bands around before the night has circled round. And I have to say, the illustrations really are spectacular, if not more spectacular than the poem itself. But here are a couple others in here. This one is from A.A. Milne, which I don't remember ever reading, but it's really lovely. It's called The End. When I was one, I'd just begun. When I was two, I was nearly new. When I was three, I was hardly me. When I was four, I was not much more. When I was five, I was just alive. But now I am six. I'm as clever as clever. So I think I'll be six now forever and ever, which I think is just a sweet, sweet one. And one author that I've never heard of before, but it's called Jill Came from the Fair, so I had to bring it in. And this one by Eleanor Farjon. And I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly, but and it is Jill came from the fair with her pennies all spent. She had had her full share of delight and content. She had ridden the ring to a wonderful time. She had flown in a swing half as high as the moon in a boat that was drawn by an ivory swan beside a green lawn on a lake she had gone. She had bought a gold packet that held her desire. She had touched the red jacket of one who ate fire. She had stood at the butt, and although she was small, she had won a rough nut with the throw of a ball, and across the broad back of a donkey astraddle, she had jolted like Jack in the Box on a saddle, till mid frolic and shout and tinsel and litter, the light started out making everything glitter. And dazed by the noise and the blare and the flare, with her toys and her joys, Jill came from the fair. So it's a lovely collection, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's still around somewhere or that you can find a copy of it. It's the Illustrated Treasury of Children's Literature, and it is a lovely book for kids or adults. It's got great stories.
All right. Thank you, Jill. Peter.
Well, so what is the greatest American poem?
That's a question.
Yeah, I looked into that, and I think the consensus is that it's Song of Myself by Walt Whitman from Leaves of Grass, which was published in 1855 and has, I think, had a huge influence on American poetry ever since. As you know, and he's obviously one of these guys who doesn't come along very often in many ways. He begins with a kind of, this is a total Walt Whitman thing. He begins with a prose introduction to his own poem, he's telling you how to interpret this, his work, which I love that kind of thing. So he says this in his introduction: "The Americans of all nations at any time upon the earth have probably the fullest poetical nature. The United States themselves are essentially the greatest poem." I that's so moving to me. In the history of the earth hitherto, the largest and most stirring appear tame and orderly to their ampler largeness and stir. In other words, and then so it begins with the actual poem, then this goes on and on, you know, so you can't go wrong, you know, when you're reading it. And then it begins with this famous beginning. I celebrate myself and what I assume you shall assume, for every atom belonging to me as good belongs to you. Then there are 1,336 lines.
Wow.
And he ends with this. I bequeath myself to the dirt to grow from the grass I love. If you want me again, look for me under your boot soles. You will hardly know who I am or what I mean, but I shall be good health to you nevertheless, and filter and fiber your blood. Failing to fetch me at first, keep encouraged. Missing me one place, search another. I stop somewhere waiting for you.
Mm.
And here we are.
Okay. We are talking books on poetry this morning. If you have a suggestion for us, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we will have more after a break. Listening to The Point, it's our monthly book show, and the theme is poetry this month. With us is retired reference librarian Jill Erickson and New York Times bestselling author Peter Abrahams. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Got an email from Christine who says, I think for people who want to get more out of poetry, Padraig O'Tama's Poetry Unbound is so wonderful, a combination of poetry collection and analysis. I also love reading novels written by poets because their use of language is so beautiful. I especially love Ocean Vuong, her latest poetry, Time is a Mother, novel Emperor of Gladness. Christine, thanks for that. And you have Padraig O'Tama's poetry book.
I brought it with me. And this is another book which has clearly been on my bookshelves, and I hadn't looked at it very much until, thank you, we decided to talk about poetry. And it's interesting because the verdict, this is from the Library Journal, and the verdict is, with his intimate tone, O'Tama takes poetry out of the classroom and puts it back into the hands of the reader. He thereby makes the world a better place, recommended for poetry collections everywhere. And I had one poem of his that that he has collected. And again, these are all poems that he's collected. And they put in the poem, and then they write a little bit about the poem, and he writes a little bit about the poem. And this one is called Some Things I Like, Lemon Sissé. And what I love, in the parentheses under that, it says, a poem to shout. And I won't shout, but you could shout to do this. And it goes like this. I like wrecks. I like ex-junkies. I like flunks and ex-flunkies. I like the way the careerless career. I like flat beer. I like people who tell half stories and forget the rest. I like people who make doodles in important written tests. I like being late. I like fate. I like the way teeth grate. I like laceless shoes, cordless blues. I like the one-bar blues. I like buttonless coats and leaky boats. I like rubbish tips and bitten lips. I like yesterday's toast. I like cold tea. I like reality. I like ashtrays. I write and like crap plays. I like curtains that don't quite shut. I like bread knives that don't quite cut. I like rips in blue jeans. I like people who can't say what they mean. I like spiders with no legs, pencils with no lead, ants with no heads, worms that are half dead. I like holes. I like coffee cold. I like creases in neat folds. I like signs that just don't know where they're going. I like angry poems. I like the way you can't bend down the sea. See? And so, of course, it's C-S-E-A and then S-E-E at the end. It's Some Things I Like by Lemon Sissé. And this book has just full of all kinds of great poems in here and really interesting collection. It is Poetry Unbound, 50 Poems to Open Your World. And thanks to our listener.
Yes, Christine, thank you.
Yes, that's great.
Okay.
Well, moving on, sort of, I think we're now edging into how-to, the kind of how-to of poetry. And Mary Oliver, who now dead, but a prize-winning poet who lived a lot in Provincetown much of her life, has something called a poetry handbook, a prose guide to understanding and writing poetry. Anyway, it's a terrific book it's not waffly, it's not cloudy, it's not foggy, it's very precise, and she stresses discipline and having reading a lot of poetry, understanding meter and rhyme and all these things, even if you're going to be writing in free verse, which doesn't have meter and rhyme. So she starts this way, getting ready. In Romeo, if Romeo and Juliet had made appointments to meet in the moonlight-swept orchard, in all the peril and sweetness of conspiracy, and then more often than not fail to meet, one or the other lagging or afraid or busy elsewhere, there would have been no romance, no passion, none of the drama for which we remember and celebrate them. Writing a poem is not so different. It is a kind of possible love affair between something like the heart, the courageous but also shy factory of emotion, and the learned skills of the conscious mind. They make appointments with each other and keep them, and something begins to happen. Or they make appointments with each other but are casual and often fail to keep them. Count on it, nothing happens. So this is not going to come easy. Like you start with that, and then there's wonderful advice. But here's a terrific thing. She writes, at least to me, on the contemporary poem. For a poet, and indeed for any writer, diction has several components: the sound of the word, the accuracy of the word, and its connotation, the atmosphere, let us say, that is created by word choice. Wonderful stuff, yeah. And it's full of that. So she wrote a book of dog songs, she calls it, which is total. She was big into dogs and dog poetry. And of course, you know, I write the Chet and Bernie mystery series.
Say, does this attract you to
Yes,
yeah.
Well, no, if I don't say this, I'll be Macmillan publicity department will find me. So my latest Chet and Bernie novel, A Cat and a Hot Tin Woof, is just out. So there, it's done. I won't be fine. So here's Mary Oliver's poem, How It Begins. A puppy is a puppy is a puppy. He's probably in a basket with a bunch of other puppies. Then he's a little older, and he's nothing but a bundle of longing. He doesn't even understand it. Then someone picks him up and says, I want this one. So a lovely little poem.
Oh, that's such a great little poem.
It's just perfect. She doesn't waste a word.
Yeah.
You know, but you see her warm heart and her understanding of the subject matter. But I want to just point out this little expression, a bundle of longing. Okay, a bundle of longing, there's a concrete noun butted up against an abstract. Mm-hmm. Bundle is concrete, longing is abstract. Milk of human kindness.
It says so much in so few words.
Yes, yeah. And it's a wonderful literary technique. I use it myself, usually without knowing. When I read over, I see, oh, I've done it. Hey, there's a lucky break. You know, so bundle of longing.
Yeah.
So that brings me to, there's this question, you know, are songs poetry? And I don't think they are, because songs are about the music first and the lyrics are second. But there's poetry in them. Mm-hmm. And, for example, I'm going to recite a little something. Now the song is nearly over. We may never find out what it means. Still, there's a light I hold before me. You're the measure of my dreams. Measure of my dreams. Measure is the concrete. And dreams is, I'm sorry. Yes, measures the concrete, dreams is the abstract. That little verse is the Pogues, you know, famous Irish band, Shane McGowan, no longer with us because someone who lived his lifestyle would never live it for long. But to me, okay, so poetry pops up in songs a lot.
Yeah.
I don't get, but that one, total, you know, he just nailed it, the measure of my dreams. And you're the measure of my dreams. People have that tattooed on them.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So what are remind us the books.
Okay, so the first was Mary Oliver's A Poetry Handbook, which is a kind of how-to. Then there's her dog songs. All these are poems by Mary Oliver. All
on dogs.
Yes, and you can go on YouTube and find her reading some.
Oh, okay. All
but right. Here's some. If you do, you'll find that Helena Bonham Carter reads Mary Oliver's poetry better than Mary Oliver. But, you know, I mean, that's to be expected. You know, she's an interpreter.
Yes.
And then finally, I just recited something by the Pogues.
Okay.
And, that's from Rainy Night in Soho.
Okay, is great. I want to mention a kid's book I mentioned to you guys before we went on the air, because this was when Jackson was younger. We used to read this, and I would laugh out loud. And this is Dirt on My Shirt, and it's written by Jeff Foxworthy, who's a comedian, illustrated by Steve Bjorkman. And it's just full of kind of really fun, playful poems about, you know, kids stuff, right? And I'm going to just read you Dirt on My Shirt because I don't have the book in front of me, and this is the only one I have. There's dirt on my shirt and leaves in my hair. There's mud on my boots, but I don't really care. Playing outside is so much fun, to breathe the clean air and feel the warm sun. To stomp in a puddle or climb a big tree makes me quite happy. Just look and you'll see. So these, yeah, some of them, sweet, like, some of them are so funny. Mm. I definitely recommend Dirt on My Shirt for your young readers. All right, Jill.
Well, I thank you so much for good description of Mary Oliver. I also brought some Mary Oliver, but I'm glad that we both did. It's she's just wonderful. She's was and is in reading her books. They're fabulous. Now I'm going on a real tangent, yet another tangent. But I just couldn't stop myself, because when I was young, I really loved Ogden Nash. And I don't know if any of you remember Ogden Nash, but this is Verses. The book I have in my hand is, which is, may I say, still in the Falmouth Public Library, Verses from 1929 on, in this Ogden Nash. But what I discovered is, and I was like, well, you know, they're all very funny. Which one can I decide to mention? It turned out, so I'm looking at the table of contents, and somebody has gone through and, like, checked off all the best poems as you go through. And I was like, okay, I'll go with some of those, because they're really, I went to them, and they were like, they're great. And they're short, and he's very funny. And I think there must be some connection to ocean as well. Here's a very short one called The Mermaid. Say not the mermaid is a myth. I knew one once named Mrs. Smith. She stood while playing cards or knitting. Mermaids are not equipped for sitting. So they're just goofy. But here's another one. The fly. God in his wisdom made the fly and then forgot to tell us why. Which is another one.
That was a good one.
And surprisingly, there is a poem in here about Martha's Vineyard, which I'm like, did he go? Does anybody know? Did he hang out at Martha's Vineyard? I've never heard of this before, but Martha's Vineyard. I live at the top of Old West Chop in a house with a cranky stove. And when I swim, I risk life and limb on the pebbles that line the cove. Where the waves wish wash and the foghorn blows and the blowfish nibble at your toes, o's, o's. The blowfish nibble at your toes. I lunch and sup on scrod and scup and once in a while on beans. And the only news that I get to peruse is in last year's magazines. Where the waves wish wash and the foghorn blows and the blowfish nibble at your toes, o's, o's. The blowfish nibble at your toes. When the seagulls shout, the lights go out. And whenever the lights go on, I pursue the moth with the dusting cloth till the Bob White brings the dawn. Where the waves wish wash and the foghorn blows and the blowfish nibble at your toes, o's, o's, the blowfish nibble at your toes. But when the breeze creeps through the trees and the small waves shiver and shake, oh, I wouldn't swap my Old West Chop for a sizzling Western steak. I want to wish wish where the foghorn blows and the blowfish nibble at your toes, o's, o's, the blowfish nibble at your toes. That's the Martha's Vineyard poem. And one other, which is Tableau at Twilight. I sit in the dusk, I'm all alone. Enter a child and an ice cream cone. A parent is easily beguiled by sight of this coniferous child. The friendly embers, warmer gleam, the cone begins to drip ice cream. Cones are composed of many a vitamin. My lap is not the place to bite them in. Although my raiment is not chinchilla, I flinch to see it become vanilla. Coniferous child, when vanilla melts, I'd rather it melted somewhere else. Exit child with remains of cone, I sit in the dusk, I am all alone, muttering spells like an angry druid, alone in the dusk with the cleaning fluid. So this is some Ogden Nash that many people apparently thought were great because they marked them all off in the book.
Very good. All right, let's talk to Maureen, who's giving us a call from Aquinnah. Hi, Maureen.
Hi there. Great show. And those were such happy, fun poems. Really great to hear them. Not such a happy poem, perhaps, but I love it, and I've read it at many a funeral, is Let Evening Come by Jane Kenyon, K-E-N-Y-O-N. And, just suggesting it.
Sorry, go ahead. It's Let Evening Come?
Yes, by Jane Kenyon, K-E-N-Y-O-N.
We'll look for that.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks for this. Thanks for the suggestion, Maureen.
And she's
that.
A wonderful poet.
Yeah, great. All right.
Oh, okay, so now that we're moving toward more depressing.
Oh, that's it. That's it. Maureen sent you down the rabbit hole.
No, and I'm ready. Maureen, I'm ready for that. So my next one is The Penguin Book of First World War Poetry. There were poets or who became poets in all the fighting nations, but the best were probably the British. Just a number of these are very young men, but some of them have come out of college and some not, who wrote poetry both during and in the middle of and after the war. So one of the most famous was Siegfried Sassoon, who survived. And I'll read a bit from The Deathbed. I told you, this is going to be very different. This is not Ogden Nash. This is not Ogden Nash.
Not Ogden Nash, okay.
He stirred. This is from The Deathbed. He stirred, shifting his body. Then the pain leaped like a prowling beast and gripped and tore his groping dreams with grinding claws and fangs. But someone was beside him. Soon he lay shuddering because that evil thing had passed, and death, who'd stepped toward him, paused and stared. Light many lamps and gather round his bed. Lend him your eyes, warm blood, and will to live. Speak to him, rouse him. You may save him yet. He's young. He hated war. How should he die when cruel old campaigners win safe through? But death replied, I choose him. So he went, and there was silence in the summer night, silence and safety, and the veils of sleep. Then far away, the thudding of the guns. Mm. Now, he was great, and he was a mentor to Wilfred Owen, who died 1 week before the killed in action 1 week before the armistice. And he wrote this famous poem, Dulce et Decorum Est, which, so you have to know the Latin, dulce et decorum est pro patria mori, means sweet and fitting it is to die for the mother, for the, you know, for your country, which is an old Roman poem thing. So he wrote a poem called that, shortly before he died. And here's how it ends. If in some smothering dreams you too could pace behind the wagon that we flung him in and watch the white eyes writhing in his face, his hanging face, like a devil sick of sin. If you could hear at every jolt the blood come gargling from the froth corrupted lungs, obscene as cancer, bitter as the cud of vile, incurable sores on innocent tongues, my friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory that old lie, dulce et decorum est pro patria mori.
Wow.
Okay, so that's probably the most famous anti-war bit of poetry that's ever been written, Wilfred Owen. And there's many poems by him and other great poets, some of whom survived and some who died in the trenches in World War I.
All right. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. More poetry after a break. You're listening to The Point. It is our monthly book show, and the theme this month is poetry. With us is retired reference librarian Jill Erickson and New York Times bestselling author Peter Abrahams. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We've got an email from Eleanor, who's reading my mind, because in the break I said to both of you, have either of you brought any Billy Collins? And she wrote, don't forget Billy Collins. His dog poems remind us that all our dogs remain in our hearts, and she sent the collar. A dog's collar typically features a silvery D-ring where the leash is clipped on, and usually the pendants of a gray rabies tag and a smaller ID bearing a number and his name, which can work to unhinge your heart when the collar is slipped over his ears and off his body, freeing him for good. Oh, that's so good. Eleanor, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Jill, you're up
it's,
next.
I think it's Jill.
But he's great. I mean, there are piles of his books.
I thought I would do, I thought of him, but then I thought Mary Oliver's poem, because I was already talking about Mary Oliver, I do her dog poems. Yeah. But he's terrific, too.
Yes. Yeah. I think, didn't E.B. White write some stuff about dogs as well?
Probably.
Yeah. Probably. All right, Jill.
All right. So it's amazing what one discovers when, you know, you're getting ready for one of these shows. And one of the things I discovered, I knew I wanted to talk about Marge Piercy. And what I didn't know was she has a webpage that I have never looked at. Now, I saw her read her poems in like the late 1980s, maybe, in Boston. She had a full house. She did the most incredible poetry reading that I've ever been to. And of course, she lives on Cape Cod, so that gives her a bonus as well, and has for very long. And what I did not know was that she actually, and this is when before you're doing the show, you sort of look around and see what's out there. And what I found was she actually does a blog regularly. And this one was just the most recent one I saw, which was May 24th. Old friends, my two oldest friends came this Memorial Day weekend. They stayed in town. A friend from London owns that house on Duck Creek and usually comes this time of year, but her husband is very ill and she canceled plans to come now and hopes for August only this year. They opened the house for her, arranged for what needed to be fixed. As Eleanor is allergic to cats, we brought takeout. We brought takeout from Moby Dick's. There's no more delicious seafood than Moby Dick serves. Anyway, it goes on about her what happened there, but one of the books, the first book probably that I had that she wrote is Circles on the Water, Selected Poems of Marge Piercy. And I have really care about, I love this one. I love lots of her poems, but this one, while it's an old one, I still love it. It's called Bridging. Being together is knowing, even if what we know is that we cannot really be together, caught in the teeth of the machinery of the wrong moments of our lives. A clear umbilicus goes out invisibly between thread we spin fluid and finer than hair, but strong enough to hang a bridge on. That bridge will be there, a blacklight rainbow arching out of your skull whenever you need, whenever you can open your eyes and want to walk upon it. Nobody can live on a bridge or plant potatoes, but it is fine for comings and goings, meetings, partings, and long views, and a real connection to someplace else where you may, in the crazy weathers of struggle, now and again, want to be. That's Bridging from Marge Piercy. And it is really, here's one more, which is What's That Smell in the Kitchen? For all of you that happen to be in the kitchen. All over America, women are burning dinners. It's lamb chops in Peoria. It's haddock in Providence. It's steak in Chicago. Tofu delight in Big Sur. Red rice and beans in Dallas. All over America, women are burning food they're supposed to bring with calico smile on platters glittering like wax. Anger sputters in her brain pan, confined but spewing out missiles of hot fat. Carbon despair presses like a clinker from a barbecue against the back of her eyes. If she wants to grill anything, it's her husband spitted over a slow fire. If she wants to serve him anything, it's a dead rat with a bomb in its belly,
oh my goodness,
ticking like the heart of an insomniac. Her life is cooked and digested, nothing but leftovers in Tupperware. Look, she says, once I was roast duck on your platter with parsley, but now I am Spam. Burning dinner is not incompetence, but war. So that's What's That Smell in the Kitchen.
What a great idea.
Isn't it something? So Marge Piercy, pick up one of her books. There are lots of them. And take a look at her blog.
Yeah. All right. Peter.
Well, since we just did World War I, and especially because it was Memorial Day,
right,
so recently, World War II. So World War II poetry does not get the play that World War I poetry does, but it's really interesting too. And there were a lot more enlisted men writing poetry as opposed to officers in World War I. So I'll just do two quick ones. One is by Witter Beiner, and it's called Defeat. On a train in Texas, German prisoners eat with white American soldiers, seat by seat, while black American soldiers sit apart, the white men eating meat, the black men heart. Now, with that other war a century done, not the live North, but the dead South has won. Not yet a riven nation comes awake. Whom are we fighting this time, for God's sake? Mark well the token of the separate seat. It is again ourselves whom we defeat. Terrific poem, doesn't need any explanation. The other one I'll read is probably the most famous World War II poem. It's very short. It's called The Death of the Ball Turret Gunner by Randall Jarry, who was also in the military, but he spent the war on a base, Air Force base in Arizona, fixing the planes. We had a bomber called the B-17, which was a terrific bomber, and so it used to bomb over Germany, and the German fighters would come up, and to keep them off, there was a ball at the bottom, underneath the fuselage, was this sort of ball. And inside, in a totally claustrophobic, was the guy with the machine guns. He could move the turret would swing around, and he would fight off the fighters. But the claustrophobic, and what would happen if anything happened and you're there? Mm-hmm. There's no getting out. So this is the death of the ball turret gunner. From my mother's sleep, I fell into the state, and I hunched in its belly till my wet fur froze. 6 miles from Earth, loosed from its dream of light, I woke to black flak and the nightmare fighters. When I died, they washed me out of the turret with a hose.
Oh, wow.
Death of the Ball Turret Gunner by Randall Jarry. My favorite poem from World War II.
All right, Jill, on that cheery note.
Yeah. Do you want me to go now? Is that enough? No, because I'm going to do, after Jill, I'm going to do children's.
Okay, good, good, yeah. Good.
Excellent. Well, I've got a new book here, which is Poetry Says It Better, Poems to Help You Wake Up by Ellen Burstyn. And this is Ellen Burstyn, who's the actress, and I had no idea that she was a big, big fan of poetry. This is the beginning of the New Yorker article that wrote about this. The actress Ellen Burstyn has what she calls an inner library of poetry that she has memorized. And of course, if you're an actress, you have to memorize a lot of stuff. So I can imagine it's easy for her to memorize poems as well. Memorized in the course of her long life. Quote, I'm 93 now, so I probably have less in my head than I used to when it comes to poems, end quote, she said the other day. Quote, but some have been there for years, decades. Burstyn was in her Upper West Side apartment, which was festooned with books, plants, crystals, orbs, and statues of Shiva and Buddha, and meditative music piped in. So the book itself is really quite lovely. And here is how she begins the book. I am an actress, not a poet, but I am a lover of poetry. I have been since high school when I read a poem for the first time. Well, not quite the first poem. The Tales of Mother Goose could be considered poetry in a way, I guess. You see, in my home, there were not only no poems, there were no books. One Christmas, my aunt and uncle gave me a copy of Heidi as a present. I treasured that book for years. I was sent to boarding school at age 6. I turned 7 there when asked to take part in the Christmas program by reciting, Little Miss Muffet sat on a tuffet, eating her curds and whey. Along came a spider who sat down beside her and frightened Miss Muffet away. I did not know what a tuffet was, had never heard of those curds and whey, but 'twas the first time I'd heard anything rhyme and learned that words knew how to play. So it's a very interesting collection of her poems that she chooses. And there are some very things that she writes about. A lot of it is about her as well and how she got involved with poetry. And here is another poem. She has a bunch of poems in here as well. And this one is called Eating Poetry by Rumi. And she's a big fan of Rumi. My poems resemble the bread of Egypt. One night passes over the bread and you can't eat it anymore. So gobble my poems down now while they're still fresh before the dust of the world settles on them. Where a poem begins is here in the warmth of the chest. Out in the world, it dies of cold. You've seen a fish, put him on dry land. He quivers for a few minutes and then is still. And even if you eat my poems while they're still fresh, you still have to bring forward many images yourself. Actually, friend, what you're eating is your own imagination. These poems are not just some bare statements and old proverbs. That's Eating Poetry by Rumi. It's an interesting book. It has, again, about her life, but also about the particular poets that she really has enjoyed. It's Poetry Says It's Better, Poems to Help You Wake Up by Ellen Burstyn.
All right. Carolyn Falmouth is recommending The Bat Poet by Randall Jarrell. And it says, there was once a little brown bat who couldn't sleep days. He kept waking up and looking at the world. Before long, he began to see things differently from the other bats, who from dawn to sunset never opened their eyes. The Bat Poet is the story of how he tried to make the other bats see the world his way. Carol, thanks for that recommendation.
And that's the same guy who wrote The Death of the Ball Turret Gunner.
No, it is not, is it?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there you go. So I want to do some children's, right?
Yes, good.
Okay, so Where the Sidewalk Ends, famous book by Shel Silverstein. So he wrote this one, and he has these terrific little illustrations, too. I'm sure kids still love Shel.
That's one of Jackson's favorite current poetry books.
Okay,
by Shel Silverstein.
So does he like The Land of Happy?
I don't know particular poems. I just know he likes that
book.
Yeah.
Okay, can you read this when you get back?
I will.
Okay, The Land of Happy. Have you been to the Land of Happy? Where everyone's happy all day, where they joke and they sing of the happiest things, and everything's jolly and gay. There's no one unhappy in happy. There's laughter and smiles galore. I have been to the land of happy. What a bore. Okay, so that "What a Bore," by the way, is called in poetry a cretic.
What is a cretic?
It's a stressed syllable followed by an unstressed and a stressed. Is a cretic, and it shows just that when I saw it in there, I knew he knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So prior to the show a few weeks ago, I guess when I was subbed in to do this, now I realize how this whole plot has developed. Jill emailed me saying, do any of your grandchildren have a favorite poem? So I asked my daughter, Lily, who has a 7-year-old daughter, Nora. She said, Nora, do you have like a favorite poem? And Nora didn't say yes. She didn't say no. This is what she said, verbatim, not reading, okay. Reciting. The Little Turtle. There was a little turtle. He lived in a box. He swam in a puddle. He climbed on the rocks. He snapped at a mosquito, he snapped at a flea, he snapped at a minnow, and he snapped at me. He caught the mosquito, he caught the flea, he caught the minnow, but he didn't catch me. And that's by Vachel Lindsay, and for some reason, my granddaughter Nora knows it by heart, but had never mentioned it to anybody.
Oh, isn't that funny?
Yeah.
See, aren't you glad decided to do this?
Yes. So thanks for thanks. You probably ran through a number of people before you came to me. No, he can't do it. She can't do it. Oh, we'll try him.
You got about a minute, Jill.
A minute. Well, for a minute, pick up a copy of called The Universe in Verse, 15 Portals to Wonder Through Science and Poetry by Maria Popova has put this together. For the illustrations, if nothing else, it is a beautiful collection of about all science and poetry and how they go together. The illustrations in here are spectacular. Here's a very short one, Optimism by Jane Hirschfield. More and more I've come to admire resilience, not the simple resistance of a pillow whose foam returns over and over to the same shape, but the sinuous tenacity of a tree. Finding the light newly blocked on one side, it turns in another, a blind intelligence true, but out of such persistence arose turtles, rivers, mitochondria, figs, all this resinous, unretractable earth. Right. And so The Universe in Verse by Maria Popover, it's a beautiful book and really very interesting.
Got it. All right. Jill Erickson, Peter Abrahams, as always, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll have a link with the books we talked about up on our website later today. I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.